Mac Power Users, episode 736, maintaining and caring for your Apple hardware. Hello, welcome back to Mac Power Users. My name is Stephen Hackett. I'm joined by my friend and yours, Mr. David Sparks.
Hey, Stephen. How are you today?
I am good. It's spring break. We got kids running around. We're going to take some time off at the end of the week, and it's going to be good. I'm excited that spring is here, at least here in the American South, it's here.
Yeah. What do you do for like a fun thing during spring break with the kids?
I think we're going to do some hiking, I think, towards the end of the week.
Nice.
Maybe do a couple of fire nights in the fire pit out back at home. My kids are all homebodies mostly, and as am I, so they don't require much to be excited.
I've got a big hiking initiative going on in my life right now. One of my sisters and I have decided we want to start hitting the national parks and like start doing some serious hiking, but we're building up our stamina here in Southern California with our rattlesnake strewn scrubby little hikes here. You know, it's not as fun. It's desert climate, really. So the hikes are not as interesting as they are like if you go to Northern California with those big trees.
Right.
But it's still cool. Yeah, we'll have to keep in touch on that. Maybe there's some Mac Power Users tech we can talk about.
Yeah. I know. Is this crossing the line to self-promotion? I don't know anymore. But we pushed a release to Pedometer Plus Plus where you can have your weather overlaid on your workout route now. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I'll have to get that loaded up. Anything David Smith makes is just naturally in the wheelhouse of Mac Power Users. So I don't think it's cross promotion. I think it's
just helping people out.
Speaking of cross promotion, this is definite cross promotion. Keyboard Maestro Field Guide got an update. And I long promised it. It's got all the stuff for versions 10 and 11. It's got, I think it's something like 15 or 16 new videos. If you already own the Keyboard Maestro Field Guide, just go log in. It's there for you. It's a free update. As usual, I like to do free updates for little updates, but if I have to do a whole new recording to the whole course, then I'll make a new edition. But this is not a new edition. It's just some more content. It's there for you, waiting for you. If you don't have Keyboard Maestro Field Guide and you're interested, you can buy it. We've got a link in the show notes. Use the code MPUKM. Mac Power Users Keyboard Maestro. Not a secret. MPUKM gets you 20% off. But that's only good for a week. So if you want to get in on that, jump in. And the Keyboard Maestro, Peter was nice enough to give a discount on the app. So if you want to get Keyboard Maestro, use the code KMFG, Keyboard Maestro Field Guide. You get 10% off Keyboard Maestro. So that's there. I'm really happy. To me, the ability to do these updates is a sign that I'm kind of getting my act together. You know, because it takes time to do them, but now I'm finding time for that and feels pretty good.
Well, and the Keyboard Maestro is one of those apps too that anytime he has an update, you know there's going to be something good in there, right? So you want to be ready to go. Yeah, we've got those links in the show notes, and I put those codes in the show notes as well, so people to go check it out. Keyboard Maestro is what, up to a version 11 now?
It's wild. And Peter is just one of my favorite developers because he really finds, you know, that space in between things Apple would never do, but, you know, Power Users would like, and he finds ways to make it easy to do it. And just a great update. We've talked about the update on the show when it came out. And I just think, you know, it's nice supporting a cool guy making cool software. And I love that the field guide is helping people access that. So it's there. And like I said, discount 20% off, good for a week. Check it out.
Today on More Power Users, which is our ad-free, longer version of the show, you've got a little field trip report because you went to Disney, but not the one you normally go to.
Yeah, I went to Disney World. My daughter's doing an internship. It was really to visit her more than anything else, but I have a tech story about it. So we will be talking about that. You know, something you just said, I have to point out. It seems like everybody on the East Coast always calls Disney World Disney. They don't call it Disney World. And people on the West Coast, they call them Disneyland or Disney World. It's just an interesting thing I noticed. Mr. Liss, you know that guy?
I do. I'm aware. Yeah.
Yeah. He apparently has some some strange fixation on Disney World. I don't understand it. Mm. I don't understand these Disney adults. They don't make any sense to me. But
look, anyway. I love Casey. He's probably listening. Disney. Hi, Casey. Casey yeah. has weird obsessions about a lot of things. So it's yeah. fine.
There you go.
Here, I'll balance that by saying his app Vision, his app call sheet. I will balance that by saying his excellent call sheet app is now available on Vision OS as like a native Vision app. And it's pretty sweet. Nice. So we've nice. Now balanced out the Casey Karma.
Yeah, there we go. We don't want the Casey Karma to be out of balance.
You don't want that. That's how you end up, getting force-fed Velveeta. Okay. Hardware.
Wow. Now it's out of balance again. There you go.
Apple.
Hardware.
Apple hardware.
Yeah. So I love this show because I feel like a lot of us own Apple hardware. And there are tricks of the trade of maintaining it. We've got a co-host here that was an Apple genius, Mr. Hackett, and you collect Apple hardware. And I thought this would be a great show to kind of talk about how do we maintain that hardware. We're avoiding software generally with today's topic, but there's a bunch of great advice in the outline that was largely made by Stephen about how to maintain your Apple hardware. And I think this is a good service to the Mac Power User community. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of common things that people run into, right? Kind of everyday things. And I think we can be of service. But I wanted to start actually, weirdly enough, with cleaning. I know questions that I get both as a person on the internet, but also a person in real life. A lot of people have questions about how they can clean their devices safely. Right. I think we all know you probably shouldn't throw your iPhone in the washing machine. But there are some general guidelines and then some more specific things for certain products that we should all be aware of. And Apple, as you may have imagined, has an excellent support document about this called How to Clean Your Apple Products. And they link out to a bunch of other things, including iPods, which is just wild. So if you have questions about how to clean your iPod mini, we got you covered.
Yeah. Wow. Does anybody still use iPods?
You know, it's kind of a hipstery thing to use iPods. There, you know, some kids who are young, who didn't live through the days of syncing with iTunes, they're trying to relive those days.
I feel like if you're going to go hipster, you should go to a Sony Walkman. I mean, you know.
Go all the way.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise you're a coward. You know, just put your stuff on cassette tape and get a Walkman. But the, okay, why not? Well, also, we've heard from listeners that work in secure facility kind of stuff, like military, whatnot, and they are not allowed to bring in devices that can make recordings. And they love their iPods because they can listen to their music and bring it to work.
Yeah, yeah. So there are uses, I guess, for that sort of thing. But yeah, there are some people out there doing the iPod thing. You know, I don't know if teenagers using it are going to go to an Apple support page to answer questions, but that's, I guess, out of beyond the scope of this conversation.
We used to have one that we passed around the family because my Audible subscription was tied to it. And so if I wanted Daisy to listen to a book that I had bought, I would just loan her the Audible iPad or iPod, you know. Mm. But she didn't, she realized that my taste in books is not her taste in books. So that became unnecessary.
Okay. iPods aside, if you have other things in yeah. your life, there are some basic guidelines. Apple says to use soft, lint-free cloths. Obviously you don't want to use abrasive cloths or towels. And they also include paper towels as something not to use. And as a glasses wearer, I already knew this. Paper towels are deceptively dangerous when it comes to things like yeah. screens or plastics because they can scratch. Like you can get that edge yeah. and you can scratch something with paper towels. They have those fibers in them. So those soft lint-free cloths are what you want. I've got a box of like, basically these that I bought on Amazon 100 years ago. And I just very slowly kind of working my way through the box. You can usually rewash them and dry them like on a gentle cycle and they're totally fine. But something that's not going to scratch or something that's free of abrasive. So you're not going to tear something up.
Yeah, microfiber cloths, all that stuff is good. But paper towels are on like the sandpaper spectrum, you know,
yeah.
that's bad.
Don't do it.
Do they talk about what liquid to use? I mean, or do you use a liquid when you're polishing your Apple device?
Yeah, they do have quite a bit to say about that. They say, first of all, not to spray liquid directly onto a device, right? That if you're going to use a cleaning liquid, you want to spray the cloth. And that makes sense, right? You don't want to spray a laptop and then it run down the screen and get into the hinge and mess something up. There are some specific cleaning products out there that you can find that are designed for computer use. There's a product called iClear that back in the day when I was working at the Genius Bar, that's what we used. But there's lots of other things out there. You can damage things though. Some cleaners you don't want to use. You don't want to use sprays with aerosol. You don't want to use anything that has bleach or abrasive, right? Some cleaners have like particulate in them to help scrub. Obviously, you don't want to put that on any electronic devices. And Apple says you want to unplug all cables, all power sources, all devices when you go to clean something. A lawyer wrote this somewhere. It's like, unplug everything from your studio display before cleaning the screen. It's like, nah, dude, I'm just going to clean it when it's plugged in. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not spraying liquid into the holes in the top of my, I'm just cleaning the glass. But I think the big thing here is common sense. It's use a cloth that's soft and lint-free. Use something designed to clean electronics. And don't use something with bleach.
The bleach one gets me. It's like, they needed to write that down, really.
It happened somewhere and someone got mad. So here we are.
I got at Macworld, I mean, this is like 20 years ago, a big bottle of iClear. I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I don't even know how I got it on an airplane. But the maybe it was before that. I don't know. But they got this massive bottle of iClear. And I think at this point, I'm going to have to will it to somebody, you know, because it's good for life. I mean, it doesn't take much, but like you said, just spray it on the cloth and then wipe the device and you're good.
Yeah. Along with bleach, you don't want to use hydrogen peroxide. I probably should have said that.
Okay.
I know they're different.
Is acid okay?
Yeah. Don't dip it in a bathtub full of acid, right? We've all seen what happens there on shows like Breaking Bad. And you don't want to use a lot of cleaners like that on fabric or leather surfaces. So if you're talking about a phone case or an Apple Watch band, they very often will have specific instructions. So that's something, you know, go check out the support document and see. I know that I use the Trail Loop, which is just like the Velcro band on the Apple Watch Ultra. And it looks gross all the time. And like, I take it off sometimes and kind of clean it in the sink and let it dry. And it looks clean for a while again. It's kind of inevitable with a lot of these products, but you can do what you can.
I'm going to help you out there because I struggle with that too. I ran it through the washing machine. I did all this stuff. As you know, Steven and I are fans of the color orange.
Sure. Right?
But that it does get dirty fast. But this is what you do. Find something you want to watch on TV and put a little TV tray in front of you. Get a little dish with a dish soap. Dawn is the preferred one for me. And just put it in there and then put a towel next to it and you rub it in the dish soap while you're watching TV, and then you pull it out, you lay it on the towel and you scratch where the dirt is. And I got it really close to clean that way. And now I do that about every 6 months and it looks fine. It took me a long time to figure that out, but just use your hands and a little Dawn dish soap.
Dawn soap in general does a good job on lots of things.
I don't know why, what they've done to it, but it's very friendly to Apple Watch bands.
Mm-hmm.
There's one for free.
They also say, interestingly, don't use cleaning products on the Apple Vision Pro. So things like 70% isopropyl alcohol wipes, Clorox disinfectant wipes, you can use those on hard, non-porous surfaces. So like the bottom of a MacBook Pro or something, the back of your phone maybe. But they say, don't use that on Vision Pro. And my guess is the Vision Pro obviously has a lot of cloth, right? There's a lot of things going on there. And I think they basically want you to kind of use that with a clean, dry cloth that actually comes with the box with your $3,500 headset.
Have you cleaned your Vision Pro yet?
Just with the cloth that's come in it. Because the front gets kind of gross. Like you're manhandling it all the time.
Yeah. I've cleaned the front. I haven't touched the inside. I'm afraid to. On your advice, I bought the little insert thing that you recommended a few weeks ago on the show, and that's great. And I try to keep those out of direct sunlight and in a drawer. And someday I will have to clean that, and I'll be nervous that day. But I guess I would just use the polishing cloth that it comes with.
Probably. And I think that there are also specific instructions about cleaning the Zeiss optical inserts. In fact, Apple links out to a Zeiss website on how to use them and clean them. But Zeiss just has it as a PDF. I don't know what they're doing. Very different ideas on how to do a support website, I guess.
Yeah. The nano textured screens are another one that have got special needs.
Yeah. I don't own one of these for this reason. I also don't have any glare issues where my desk is.
Yeah.
But the nano texture finish on the XDR or the Studio Display or like that one Intel iMac that had it as an option, it came with its own cleaning cloth. And you can use that with 70% isopropyl alcohol. But you are to never use any other cloth to clean the nano texture glass. If you lose the cloth, you can order a replacement from Apple. So it seems pretty high maintenance to me. That and the fact that I didn't need the anti-glare properties of it like scared me off from this. And I have never owned anything with this nano texture display.
Okay. On your Apple display, how often do you clean it and what do you do?
So I use iClear on it. And I don't know, it's kind of as needed. I don't feel like I, you know, do it all the time. I'm pretty good about not touching my displays, but you know, I talk for a living at my computer, right? It gets stuff on it sometimes.
Splash zone.
Yeah.
I am so scared to clean my Pro Display XDR because it's such a fancy monitor. It is not nano textured. I know all I need to do is squirt some iClear on a cloth and wipe it, but I am always hesitant to do so. But I have done it like 3 times since I bought it. Right now I'm looking at it and it definitely needs it.
But, yeah, you can really tell like on the black border. It's like, oh, what is that? Why is that on there?
Yeah. Or if you just turn it off once in a while and look at it, you're like, yeah, this is filthy. I got to do something about this. Yeah. I don't know why I'm so hung up on it because it's just a piece of glass. I mean, it's not a big deal. But I think for some reason I got nano texture finish cleaning spillover into this fancy monitor. You know, like in my head, it's a bigger deal than it is.
Maybe. We got to talk about the fine woven accessories.
Do we?
I understand Apple wanting to move away from leather. I appreciate that move. There's still lots of great leather cases out there you can get. I like one by Nomad that's really good. I don't think fine woven is a good product. Like I don't think it's held up well. It feels weird. It's very strange. I'm just curious what the future of fine woven is. They're not going to go back to leather, right? Maybe they just drop the high-end case business, or maybe they do something like quote unquote vegan leather, you know, like artificial human-made leather. Like I have that in my truck. It's like vegan leather seats. But if you have a fine woven case or the wallet, you get to sit down, like you said, David, in front of the TV. You're going to mix 5 milliliters of liquid laundry detergent into 1 cup of water. So 1 teaspoon into 1 cup. I'm reading from Apple's website. Dip a lint-free cloth into the soapy water solution, wringing out slightly, and rub the cloth on the case surfaces gently for 1 minute. Wipe the case clean with a separate cloth that's slightly dampened with fresh water. Dry the case with soft, dry, lint-free cloth, making sure to remove any excess moisture. And Apple says this material may look different and show wear over time as the fibers get compressed with normal use. Some scratches may diminish over time.
Okay, so first I will say that I will go on record saying Apple will have a luxury case next year, and it will not be fine woven. Okay. I think they've learned their lesson, but I don't think they're going to bow out that they're going to do something. What they should do is go over to Peak Design and say, what are you guys using? Because the Peak Design cases have a fine woven like texture, but I've had them for years and they never have these problems.
Yeah, they're great.
Whatever Peak, Yeah. In fact, I'm using one right now. And so I think they need to reconsider, or maybe they'll call it Fine Woven, but it'll be something else entirely. I don't know. But the, but yeah, that one was kind of a whiff from Apple. Mm-hmm. What about, okay, let's get into earwax. I want to talk about the AirPods.
Good.
One of my family members who shall remain nameless, generates a lot of earwax. Mm. And this person always buys Apple Care and always gets 3 pair of AirPods and does everything that this person can do to keep them clean. But for whatever reason, just wrecks AirPods with the copious amounts of earwax. is there hope for us, Stephen? Is there hope?
I think so. I'm familiar with this, not from AirPods, but the fact that I use in-ear monitors at work. Yeah. So I don't use overhead headphones. I don't use AirPods Max. Like, these are custom made. I had molds in my ears made, and then the molds got shipped off. I have in-ears. They're great. But earwax machines, way more than AirPods, because the way they fit like perfectly to your ear. And these in-ears came with a cleaning kit, and it's like a little brush, and then there's like a little scoop. There's something that looks like a tiny shepherd's crook, and you can go in there and clean the openings out. And Belkin makes something like that for AirPods. You can, of course, like use a cloth, right, and try to clean them, but you got to get under that mesh. And the trick is, I think, to be really gentle and not to bring liquid near those openings, because there are speakers right behind those mesh openings on the insides of the AirPods. Obviously, you don't want to get moisture in there. But just as I was preparing for this episode, Apple apparently filed a patent for an AirPods cleaning kit themselves. Now, look, Apple patents everything. This probably won't ever happen. But I'm going to put the link in the show notes to give you an idea. This is very similar to what I have with my in-ears. Very similar. And this is sort of the type of thing that that you could find if you've got a real kind of problem, you know, with buildup.
Yeah. And I think if you do generate a lot of earwax, clean them often. I think that's really the trick. And Apple does, like, if you go in and say, well, you know, it's not working, they'll say, oh yeah, the earwax has ruined it, though, but we'll sell you a new one. It's generally not a replaceable, you know, like warranted item unless you're within the warranty period. So,
yeah.
And if you do find that that's a problem, I thought the trick of getting Apple Care on them, if you know that you're going to destroy them with your earwax, isn't really, this is a good case, a good argument for Apple Care. I thought it'd be fun just to go through real quickly and just kind of break down how we're cleaning our stuff. We've already talked about monitors. What about the iPhone? I mean, for me, the iPhone is I clear on a cloth and I just wipe it down once in a while. There's not much else.
Yeah. Or like even just like on my jeans, like outside of my jeans, like it's not, not that big of a deal.
Make sure to clean your lenses frequently on your phone, especially if you wear makeup. Theoretically you wouldn't have the lens against your skin if you have makeup, but sometimes they get dirty, and we've heard from numerous listeners that say the camera is not working right, and then say wipe it off, and it's like, oh, now it's fine, you know. So check the lenses on the phones. iPads, the same thing. iClear, some cloth. I will occasionally, if the back gets dirty, I will use a more conventional wipe on the back, you know, because it's just the back. I don't care. And but generally, I try to kind of stick to Apple's advice on that stuff. The one I really wanted to hear about from you, Stephen, and talk through is the keyboard.
Yeah.
Like, cleaning the keyboard.
Yeah.
You know.
So I got two things here. The first is actually an application. So I know we're going to talk about software, but talking about software called Keyboard Clean Tool by our friends over at Better Touch Tool.
Yeah.
All it does is lock your inbuilt keyboard. So like, so for me, this is like cleaning the keyboard of the MacBook Pro itself, which is black and gets greasy and looks gross after like 3 seconds. And it locks the keyboard and you can clean it and then you can unlock it. It's pretty sweet. But desktop keyboard, obviously you can turn off, right? Or unplug and be able to clean it more freely. But yeah, keyboards are gross, man. They just like, do you remember like back in like the mid 2000s before we got the aluminum era, they had that white clear keyboard.
Yeah.
And it would just be like a whole sandwich worth of stuff in there in no time. It was so gross.
It was like an ant farm of your body detritus, if you looked at it. It was so disgusting. It was like one of those things where like, oh, this looks great. It's clear. You can see the electronics. They're like, oh, but humans shed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I do that. Every time I do this, I think about you. I've never shared it with you, but I turn off my keyboard every couple months and I just turn it upside down and I just bang it on my desk. And I think Steven would be so disappointed right now, but I just kind of bang it on the desk and like stuff falls out of it. Right. You know? And then I usually take a minute and I just look at all that stuff that fell out of it. I'm like, wow, that is gross. And this is gang with an Apple keyboard, which doesn't have a lot of space and clearance in it. It's not like, you know, a clicky keyboard where there's a lot more room for things to fall in. But that, a lot of stuff comes out of that when I bang it upside down.
I know. Yeah.
And then I take an alcohol wipe and I wipe it down with it turned off and I let it dry for about 15 minutes and I turn it on. And then a couple months later, it's full of Mac Sparky parts again. So that's how I clean my keyboard. What do you do?
I don't bang it against the desk. That's upsetting.
I know.
But yeah, turn it off. Some compressed air can be helpful. Wipe it down with an alcohol wipe. I will say my current keyboard is the S and the A or and the C. Just those three keys are about worn off. D a little bit, but like, tell me you're a logic editor. Like, the right side of the left command key, because my thumb sits there and I just like hit save and logic every 4 seconds. Clean it. Yes, it's good. But ultimately, all keyboards die.
This episode of the Mac Power Users is brought to you by 1Password. Go to 1Password.com/MPU today and get 20% off. 1Password is so much more than just a password manager. With 1Password, you can protect yourself, your family, your global workforce with simple security, easy secret sharing, and actionable insight reports. The internet is a scary place, and you need protection, and 1Password is exactly that. They've been a longtime sponsor of the show. Both Steven and I are users enthusiastically. I use 1Password all the time. I love it. The thing I like about 1Password is the way they are so obsessed with my security. They built the whole thing to protect me. First, they added their secret key that attaches only to my account password and gives a unique layer of security for proven protection. The second thing is it's private by default. 1Password themselves can't see your passwords or sensitive information stored in the 1Password vault. They can't use it, they can't share it, sell it, or neither can anyone else. So it's truly your data. And third is that it's verified by experts. They have third-party audits. They have the industry's largest bug bounty to help them act on threats before they can affect you. These guys are serious about protecting your security, and it doesn't matter where you're coming at this thing, whether you're an individual, a family, a business, an enterprise. They've got plans for you. They're an excellent company. I've been working with them for years. And I really do love that 1Password security. I just took a trip and I had a bunch of data in there and it was all in my 1Password secure vault. That way, nobody could see it. Even if you had the authentication or were able to unlock my phone, you still couldn't get it because it was behind that 1Password vault. And that's what I love about it. These guys are serious. Steve and I are fans. You should check it out. Go to 1Password.com/MPU today. You get 20% off and join over 100,000 businesses that trust 1Password. Check it out today, that URL one last time, 1Password.com/MPU. And thank you, 1Password, for all of your support of the Mac Power Users.
So after cleaning, where I wanted to go next was battery management. This is something that we have touched on past episodes, but I think it really fits here because 90-something percent of Apple products have batteries in them, right? Unless you're living the desktop life, and not many people are. Your iPhone, your AirPods, your watch, your laptop, everything, iPad, they all have batteries in them. And there's a lot of, I'm going to say, conventional wisdom about battery management that just isn't true anymore. It's just not really useful anymore. It used to be the case that if you plugged a laptop in for 4 years and unplugged it, the battery would be dead. Apple has built a lot of things into their hardware and software to prevent that sort of thing from happening. it used to be that, oh, you only want to charge it once you've reached 0% because then like it needs its memory. Like that's also not really true anymore. The way a cycle is counted on an Apple battery, a cycle is when you've discharged an amount of power that represents 100% of the capacity, but not necessarily all at once. So if you think about like a 2-day period and you go from 100% to 50% and then you charge it to 75 and then you run it down to 25%. If I've done my mental math right, that's 100%. And so that's a cycle. So the old days of like, I took my laptop out, I used the battery all day in class. It's dead when I get back to my dorm, because that's how it was for me in college in the PowerBook era, right? If you didn't take your charger with you, you weren't going to make it through a day. The meaning of a cycle is a little bit harder to get your hands around because it is 100% of capacity, not necessarily like one trip out. You can see your cycle count if you go to the Apple menu and you hit About This Mac and then you hit More Info, or if you open the System Information app under the Power section, it gives you a cycle count. So my M2 Pro, MacBook Pro, has 67 cycles on it, and the maximum capacity left is 90%. So that number is just like what's on the iPhone, telling you of the range, the capacity your battery had from the factory, how much of that capacity is left. Because the simple truth is, lithium-ion batteries, no matter how good they are, they're like car tires. They are going to wear out over time. And there's nothing at this point that you can really do about that. It's just kind of how it is. Hopefully that's not true forever, right? Like I've read a lot about solid state batteries and like other technology that may be able to offset this. But the way it works now is that over time you will lose battery capacity no matter what you do. And Apple's tricks in their cycle counting, Apple's tricks also in charging. So they most modern Apple products will fast charge up to 80%. And that's a convenience feature, right? If I only have a few minutes and I want to plug my phone in the hotel room before I go back out, I want it to charge as fast as it can. But then after 80%, it will switch to slower trickle charging, which is easier on the battery than like force feeding it a bunch of electrons. This also works like in conjunction with the features of, hey, you don't have to pick up your phone till 7 a.m. We're going to keep it at 80% and charge it the last 20%, kind of just in time for you to pick up your phone. Like all these features are working together to try to maximize battery life and capacity, even though ultimately it is a losing battle.
It's a lot easier than it used to be. Like if you go back to the archives of Mac Power Users, we used to recommend apps that would manage your trickle charge, and like because third-party apps had to do it. But now Apple has baked all that in. They understand the battery problem and are doing everything they can to make it as easy as possible for users. Like that thing where it goes to 80% and slows down. It also can do a thing where it doesn't even start charging until, you know, 2 hours before you wake up because it starts to figure you out. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on now in the hardware side of it to preserve your battery as much as possible. But you're right. I mean, ultimately, batteries are going to fail on these devices. And you may have to bring them in. You may want to replace them. It just kind of depends. We just went through this with one of my daughter's Apple Watches. It's ancient. And it got to the point where it was, you know, dying at like 3 p.m. And we took it in the store and it was like $100 to replace the battery. And it was like $200 to, you know, get a new one after we traded it in. And we just got her a new one. And Apple is aware of that. And it does serve them to a certain extent, right? You buy updated hardware. But, you know, battery is just a thing that you're going to have to deal with. But I do think the maintenance of these batteries could have been a much longer discussion in years past. Now, I think you can go with the defaults. Apple does a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Do you change anything in terms of the way Apple's recommended battery, charging practices?
No, I don't. I don't think I would. I think they've done a really good job over the years at making this easier to manage for people. And the reality is, like, they don't want you to think about it, and I don't want to think about it as a consumer, right? Like, I just want it to, you know, quote unquote, just work. And I think that's where Apple is with this.
Well, question for you: you own a MacBook Pro that you largely use at your desk. Do you like think about unplugging it once in a while or anything like that?
Well, it's just, this is even trickier in the Thunderbolt era because that one cable does everything, right? I'm not using a separate power cable. It's all the same thing. But I do just not because I'm worried about the battery, but I do use it off the cable a good bit. Like, I'll use it on the couch, like take it somewhere. But again, I generally don't worry about it. This has been a process and a road Apple has been on since, like, the first time, like 10 or 12 years ago, they sealed in the batteries on the MacBook Pro. Remember, people got really mad about that? Like,
yeah,
what a time. And that MacBook Pro introduced a lot of the technology that we still use today. Like the idea that, okay, the computer knows how much, charge is in the battery and how fast it's coming in, and can modulate and adjust things over time. Like, this is something they've been doing for a long time. They're really good at it. And so I don't let it keep me up at night.
I'm afraid to ask this question because I feel like we're going to spark a firestorm in the forums. But if a listener has a MacBook Pro that they use like 99% of the time at their desk, should they be thinking about unplugging it and using it and running the battery down once in a while?
It's not going to hurt anything, of course. And Apple actually, so here's the secret. Apple does a little bit of that for you. They won't do a full cycle, but macOS will hold the battery meter still, even if it's running off battery in the background. So they're not going to run it all the way down to like 15% and then you unplug it and it's dead. But they will use that battery over time to help move things around a little bit. It's not going to hurt it to unplug it and, of course, use it out on its own. You know, mine's plugged in most of the time. But
yeah,
I don't think it's got to keep you up at night. But if it makes you feel better, you know, I just don't know how big the benefit would be over the long haul.
Yeah, and just in my own personal experience, when I had a MacBook Pro as my only computer, and I moved into the studio, I had it here for like 7 months that I never unplugged it and used it. That's the reason I ended up buying a different computer. It's because I realized it had just turned into a thing that sits on my desk, but I did not worry about the battery. Years ago, I would have, but now I feel like there's so many built-in things.
Yeah.
But don't come at me in the forums on it. I get it. Some people really, you know, but I just think this is a much easier problem than it used to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
Can we talk about the MacBook Pro's high power mode real quick? Because I feel like that's something that you need to call out.
Yeah. So kind of in the realm of what can I do on battery, I'm going to get this right. You have to have a max chip in a MacBook Pro. So the 14-inch M3 Max and the 16-inch M1, M2, or M3 Max MacBook Pro. So not mine, because I've got the M2 Pro, there is a high power mode. And this is sort of the opposite end of low power mode, which we know mostly from our phones, right? It turns off certain things in the background and can extend battery life. High power mode is the opposite. It's going to let the fans run higher at a higher speed. It's going to let the GPU and CPU off the leash a little bit more. And Apple says this is really useful in terms of playback and exports of things like 8K footage. You are going to pay for it in battery life. You're going to pay for it in fan noise. This is not something you need if you're like checking email and, you know, saving stuff in Photoshop. This really is for like the upper end of what people can do with a Mac. And it's managed in the battery section of system settings. And if your machine has this, it'll be under the energy mode section. You'll have automatic, which is the default, and then low power and high power. And you can choose what you want in any given situation. And you can use high power mode plugged in or on battery, either one. But again, I think most people have a machine that can do this, probably won't ever really have a need for it. But if you do, you do have this option to sort of let it breathe a little bit more and really, really push what the system can do.
Okay. Anything else on batteries?
We touched on low power mode just for a minute. Can be really useful in times where you need your phone in particular to go a little bit further. This limits the refresh rate. It turns off a bunch of iCloud stuff in the background, turns off mail fetching, which can be a benefit. And it's on the iPad and Apple Watch as well as the Mac. The other thing I would say in particular about the phone when it comes to battery performance, and I think we've all experienced this, if you're in an area of low cell signal or no cell signal, the phone is going to boost its radios to try to stay connected. And we've all had this, right? Like maybe you're in an office building or like, you know, you're at a football game. There's a lot of people and your cell service is really cruddy and your phone gets hot, right? It's because it's working really hard to try to stay connected. And the only way around that, I guess, is to turn on airplane mode, but it's something to be aware of. That if you find yourself in large crowds or in, you know, low cell service things and you realize your battery life is really taking a hit, that's actually what's going on there. It's those radios really trying hard to stay connected to AT&T or Verizon or whatever.
Storage, I think, is probably something we should also mention with batteries, right?
Yeah, if you're going to be, you know, going on vacation, you're going to leave your MacBook Pro at home or something like that. Apple says for long-term storage, you want to charge a device to about 50% battery. You want to turn it off. If it's longer than 6 months, they want you to charge it back to 50% every 6 months. So I guess if you're going for a year, have your neighbor come over and water your plants and charge your MacBook every 6 months. And they keep things in a cool, you know, low moisture, moisture-free environment, less than 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 30 degrees Celsius. Basically, that means is don't keep your iPad in storage in the trunk of your car. Keep it, you know, in your desk drawer at home or in a closet or something. And if you do store something long term, it may enter a low battery state over time, in which case it may not come back on immediately. It may need to be charging for like 15 or 20 minutes to kind of come back. And so if you do charge something for a long time and you get out and think, oh my gosh, this thing died when I was in Europe, probably not. Probably just need some time on its charger and then it'll spring back and be your friend again.
And Apple, I think, is one of the better vendors about this. Like my electric bike, one of the victims of COVID was my electric bike battery because I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't ride it for like 8-10 months and the battery died and never recovered. It didn't have whatever bits it needs in it to recover. It was a very expensive mistake that I didn't go out and charge it once in a while.
That's a bummer.
But with Apple stuff, you're generally okay, you know. Mm-hmm. But they do die at some point. And what do you recommend when you get to the point where the device no longer has a battery that's functional or not functional enough?
And just chunk it right in the ocean. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. That's a bad idea. Apple stores and authorized storage providers can take back devices with expired batteries. You know, you can trade it in. You can just take it and they can just take it off your hands if it doesn't have any worth anymore, according to their system. And if it's under AppleCare or it's out of warranty, again, this depends on kind of where you live. Like see all the previous AppleCare conversations. You could have a new battery put in. So we did this with my wife's iPhone 13 mini. Battery capacity was hovering in the, you know, low 80%. Took it to the Apple store. They said once it hit 79% of the original capacity, it's under AppleCare. We can put a battery in it. So we did that for her phone just recently. But I think it's important to think about how much time that you have with a device before you get to this situation. So for years, again, going back to that sealed in battery MacBook Pro from 10 or 12 years ago, Apple has had the goal of 1,000 complete charge cycles under ideal conditions. Now you may think, oh my gosh, that means I've got 3 years. Well, no, it doesn't. Think about how we define charge cycles a few minutes ago. It's any time you use the entire capacity, even over the course of several days. And I can tell you, like on my phone, on the 15 Pro Max, the battery life is so good, and I have a MagSafe charger on my desk. It takes me a long time to add a cycle to this phone battery, right? Very rarely am I running it down to low power mode, let alone, you know, 10 or 5%. So that 1,000 complete charge cycles under ideal conditions, that doesn't mean the battery's dead. It just means you've hit that 80% of the original capacity. So you've got a long time. Now, what are some non-ideal conditions? Temperature is a huge deal. If you live someplace where it's really cold or really hot, your battery is going to be affected. People with EVs know this, that you get less range in the winter when it's colder. It's, again, just like a truth of lithium-ion batteries. They sort of have a sweet spot temperature-wise. Something else that Apple harks on throughout their documentation is using original chargers. I would amend that saying high-quality chargers, right? Don't get a power brick from a gas station and expect it to do what it's supposed to do. Get it from Apple. Get it from a reputable third party. But that 80% capacity at 1,000 charge cycles, I think for most people, most of the time, that means that you're going to have many, many years of excellent battery performance. And if you have Apple Care, when you hit that 79%, they can replace the battery for you and you can keep on trucking. So years and years is the answer. I mean, if you think about a Mac notebook, whose average lifespan maybe 5, 6, 7 years. Towards the end of that, you're probably going to be noticing that the runtime isn't what it used to be, but the battery won't be failed by then either, right? These things degrade. Of course, yes, sometimes batteries fail abruptly, right? You notice device swelling, or you get that little emergency thing in the menu bar, or you get a notification on your phone or iPad. It's like, oh gosh, something out of the ordinary has happened to this battery. But 9.9 times out of 10, they wear down again like car tires. Over time, they slowly degrade. And so 1,000 complete cycles, 80% slowly wearing down. Again, it's not something that keeps me up at night anymore. It just doesn't.
Yeah. And with my theory that the, you know, Apple Silicon Macs are going to last even longer than the Intel Macs did, I could see a point where you have an Apple Silicon Mac where the battery is not acceptable anymore. And you go and you pay $100 or $200 and you get a new battery in it in lieu of buying a new computer. And you're perfectly happy with that. I think that's going to be something that more common people do. I mean, I think it's just going to be, these Macs are going to last a long time and a new battery may be all you need after 5 years.
Yeah. And man, that's great. I mean, how good is that? That we're at a point in technology. I mean, you mentioned Apple Silicon. That is the reason that from a performance standpoint, these machines, both Macs and mobile devices, right? Like how many iPads out there are running around that are 10 years old and they're still fine for people to do with iPads. Yeah. That's great. That's good for consumers that we can buy a device, use it for a really long time. It meet our needs performance-wise the whole time. And you know, if I get a decade out of a Mac, like I'm not going to because I'm me, but a lot of people can, right? Like,
yeah,
a lot of people can. And I think you're absolutely right. The Apple Silicon transition is only going to extend the life of Macs moving forward. And, you know, like I've got an M2 Pro, MacBook Pro. I had no thought about upgrading to an M3, right? In my mind, yeah. M4 probably. But again, I do this for a living. Like, there's a reason we all talk so highly of the M1 MacBook Air. Like I've got one as my summer macOS beta machine, and that's going to run forever. It's just going to run forever because Apple has built these things in a way now that the performance is just incredible on day one, and that gives you lots of time into the future.
I mean, of course, I'm never going to replace a battery in a MacBook.
You know? Other people do it.
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, 1,000 cycles, I'm never getting close to that. This episode of Mac Power Users is brought to you by Ecamm. Ecamm Live is the leading video production and live streaming studio built for macOS. Ecamm does all aspects of video, not just live streaming. It's perfect for simplifying your workflow. And it's easy enough to get started quickly, but powerful enough that you can create just about anything with video. And you can do it all with the eCam app. My favorite feature of this app is how well integrated it is into macOS. There are some tools in this arena that don't really understand how the Mac does or should work. And eCam is built by people who clearly care about macOS. Whether you're streaming, recording, podcasting, or presenting, everything you need is in eCam, including support for multiple cameras and screen sharing, and a live camera switcher to let you direct the show in real time. Stand out from the crowd with high-quality video. Add logos, titles, lower thirds, and graphics. Share your screen, drop in video clips, bring on interview guests, use a green screen, and so much more, because eCam Live can do it all. Their members are entrepreneurs, marketing professionals, podcasters, educators, musicians, church leaders, bloggers, and content creators of all kinds. Get 1 month free today at eCam, E-C-A-M-M, ecam.com/MacPowerUsers, and use the code MacPowerUsers. Once again, that'll get you 1 month for free, ecam.com/MacPowerUsers with the code MacPowerUsers. Go there now to check it out. Our thanks to eCam for their support of the show and Relay FM.
Okay, wrapping up hardware, let's talk about some common issues that people hit on their devices. One that is less common now, thankfully, are keyboard problems.
Oh, no.
Man, you know, that was a deal for a long time, right?
It was.
And now it doesn't seem to be, but what do you do if you've got what do you do to protect your keyboard and hopefully not have like a dead space bar key or something?
Well, upgrade from your butterfly keyboard machine, first of all. Yeah. Talk about throwing things in the ocean, just right in there.
Yeah. That's one that
I saw someone on the forum. They got like a really low trade in value from like a 2018 MacBook Pro. It's like, oh, that stinks. Like that's really rough. I think cleanliness is a big thing with keyboards, right? These are, even though they're very small and tiny, they are mechanical things, right? They have domes and like little keyframes under them. And so if you have something stuck under a key, you can bind those mechanisms up. You can cause issues. That's why I think things like compressed air and like cleaning it every once in a while is a good thing. If you have a key that's loose or comes off, I would not recommend trying to put it back on yourself unless you have experience in hardware repair, because those little snap-on little feet and little plastic pieces, they're all really tiny. And some of them, on some models, if they break, is a much bigger deal than just putting a key on. And so if you have a key come off or something like that, you know, head to an Apple store, head to an authorized service provider. And even if all they do is take it in the back and pop on the key again for you, that's better than risking breaking something that's small and fragile.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be you just kind of seated it and you mashed it down until it went click. And now when you do that, you mash it down until it breaks and then you've got a bigger problem. So yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. The next thing you put in here is dead pixels, which is honestly not something I've thought about for a long time, but definitely can affect people. So this is when you get a display and like there's a little dot that's stuck red or is always dark or something like that. And best I can tell, Apple doesn't have a public facing document about you need this many pixels and then we'll replace your screen. I know when, and again, I was a genius such a long time ago, it's basically irrelevant, but we had a document that showed the number of pixels versus the size of the screen. And if it fell, you know, where it fell in that range dictated a replacement. There's an iMore article from 2018 that shows, at least in 2018, the current version of that document. I'm sure that's still the thing, that if you have like an iPhone display with one dead pixel or an iPad with three or whatever, then Apple would replace that component for you. But the reason I said I haven't thought about it in a long time, because I don't think I've even come across like a forum post or like something on social media of someone saying, hey, I opened a new iPad, it's got a dead pixel. Like, it just doesn't happen the way that it used to. And so if you do have that issue, I'm sure, you know, the Apple store, the service provider would take care of you. But gone are the days, like the early LCD days. I'm sure you remember this, David. Like you get a new LCD and you checked, right? Like you looked, you're like, I know this thing has a bad pixel. Where is it? But quality control and those sorts of things are so good now. I just don't think it's the issue it once was.
Or it used to be like you would have a computer for several years and then like something right in your eye range,
you'd
see a dead pixel.
And or like a bright red one. It was always red, you know, just like, right. I had a PowerBook or early MacBook Pro or something that had a red pixel and it was in the menu bar. So I just saw it all the time for like 5 years. It was awful.
Water damage. I know this isn't really hardware. But I just want to talk about it briefly. Give some thought to water damage, especially with your Mac and avoiding it. You know, we've talked today about using a desktop Mac. Like if you're using a laptop, don't lay it down on the same surface you've got glasses of water. You know, it's just a question of time, right? Mm-hmm. Even on my Mac Studio, I bought an overpriced little plastic gizmo. I think I'll have to look up who made it, but it's just a little plastic piece of acrylic plastic that fits perfectly under a Mac Studio and raises it like an inch and a half off the surface. And to me, that's an insurance thing because I do keep glasses of water on my desk. If I spill one, it's not going to get under and into the Mac.
Yeah.
So just think about things like that. There's easy ways to avoid water damage if you think about it. And if you don't think about it, you're going to have a problem at some point. In particular with your Mac, getting it wet is bad. You know, getting it wet with water is bad. Getting it wet with anything other than water is really bad. And, you know, that you can avoid that with a little bit of forethought.
It's really well said. And it happens instantly. And usually, or at least sometimes, like not at your desk. Like, so at my desk, I have Studio Display, I have a MacBook Pro. It's on this aluminum stand I got off Amazon. So it's up off the desk by several inches. And I keep drinks, like I have a bottle of water, but it has a top on it. And it sits on the other end of the desk. If I have a can of something, like I've got a sparkling water I had earlier, it's like over there on the bench, on the workbench. Like I don't leave it where I can knock it over. But anytime I've had close calls with liquid in a laptop, it's been on the couch or, you know, before the iPad, using it in bed or something like that. And it can really happen quickly. We mentioned Casey Liss earlier, right? He's kind of the poster child of this. He drowned his wife's laptop with a glass of water. And it can be really expensive. So liquid damage is not covered by the regular 1-year limited warranty. If you have AppleCare Plus, it has accident damage protection. So there's a service fee, but you want to avoid all that if you can. So the Macs in particular, I do wish there was something Apple could do to make them more water resistant. Other laptop makers have done it, but usually at the expense of like keyboard feel or other things like that. But, the Mac's obviously most susceptible. The iPad, I think, would be next. But then the phone and the watch, you know, Apple touts their ability to repel liquid, right? There's that picture, I think, from a couple iPhones ago of like testing it like at a bar and like splashing beer all over a phone, which is a lot of fun, I guess. But even then, you can be in a situation where you may get an alert on your phone saying that there's liquid in the USB-C or the Lightning connector. And in that case, Apple basically says, we're not going to charge right now. Allow the connector to dry and then try charging again. And you don't want to use rice for that, right? That's kind of along with like the battery stuff we talked about earlier, this I think is the other kind of common wisdom out there that's actually not very good advice. But if you stick something in rice, like Apple has this whole document out about it, you can have other issues that come up from that. And so you don't want to get debris or things, you know, in the ports. So the best thing is with a phone or any other device, turn it off, let it dry. That can take up a day or longer. And then try to bring it back on. You don't want to use external heat or compressed air when you have a liquid spill because you don't want to drive liquid further into the device with one of those things. You don't want to insert foreign objects. You don't want to stick like cotton swabs or paper towels like in your HDMI port of your MacBook Pro. And again, you don't want to use rice or other small particulate because that could get into ports and cause other issues. The best thing for you with a liquid spill is time, is letting it dry. And when you think it's been long enough, give it more time.
And importantly, if the liquid you spilled is like coffee or soda, you know, things that have like sugar or other, you know, stuff in it, while you're waiting for it to dry, to go on apple.com and start searching for your next Mac, because you're probably going to need it.
Or you know, if you got AppleCare Plus, no, you're going to pay that service fee. Yeah. I assume everyone bought AppleCare after our recent episode.
Yeah. I feel like you could possibly recover from a water spill, but yeah, everything else, it's time for a new Mac.
It can be bad, right? Because you have residue and sugar and like,
yeah,
that's all bad news.
That's all bad. That's bad. On mobile, there's one I wanted to talk about because this one hit me a lot during the lightning days of like people and my family members would say, my phone doesn't charge anymore, you know? And I say, bring it over here. Let me look at it. And every time I would just take a toothpick and a light and I'd point it in the lightning port. And then I would dig out like a bunch of lint, pocket lint, and then it would work again. That was like the most common troubleshooting thing I did for people with lightning ports. I have not experienced that. I was looking at my USB-C iPhone and it doesn't seem to be attracting lint like it does, but I know there's still a lot of lightning iPhones out there. And I think that's something people should keep an eye on.
The lightning port in particular, I think, was prone to it because the way it was built. So if you looked into a lightning device, it appears that there's like a ball bearing on each side. It's not a ball bearing. I don't think it's actually a bearing. I think it's actually like there's actually like
it's a plate. Metal clip.
Yeah. Like a clip that kind of got pushed out and then snapped into the side of the cable. And real low resistance, right? So you could unplug it and plug it easily. But because it moved, it was just really prone to kind of getting jammed up with pocket lint. And with USB-C, it's a little bit different. I'm looking in mine now. I've got a little bit in mine, but I haven't had any connectivity issues. I also basically never use the USB-C port on my phone. I will say now we're just going into a sidebar. I'm driving a rental car this week for interesting reasons, and it does not have wireless CarPlay. And I instantly got annoyed. I was like, oh, I've been fully converted to a wireless CarPlay person. Cause in my truck, I have it, but I don't have my truck this week. I'm driving a Mazda and I had to get a USB cable out. It's like, it's terrible.
Yeah. I'm still in the
quickly.
Yeah. My car still requires me to plug in. So I'm still living that life.
That's rough. I'm just teasing mostly.
Yeah.
But, the lightning port had sort of structural reasons to hold on to lint.
Yeah. Another hardware thing with an iPad is don't put it in a position it can get bent. This I think most often happens in a bag. Yep. You don't bend it when you're holding it, but when you like jam it in your backpack and then you put one more thing in and you sling it over your back, there iPads can bend. I mean, it's a big piece of metal and you know, it's pretty thin and apparently it's going to get thinner and bending iPads happens and it's avoidable if you are thinking about it. But I've heard from plenty of listeners and readers over the years that pulled their iPad out of a bag and said, oh man, it's all bent now.
Yeah.
It can happen.
It happened to a friend of mine. He had it in a bag and I think they were on vacation even in a rental car and had his bag in the trunk of the car. And a lot of trunks and sedans have like the arms, right?
Yeah.
And in nice cars, they're all hidden, but like, this is like a Honda or something like, where it was exposed. And, you know, it's not a Mercedes Benz where it's all covered in felt and beautiful. And the arm of the trunk came down onto his bag and it was just enough to bend and break his iPad. And so all he knows is they get to wherever they're going. He pulls his bag out. And like the next night pulls his iPad. It's like, oh my gosh, what happened? Took him a while to kind of figure out what it was. But it can definitely happen, especially, you know, with the 11, 12 inch iPads, be mindful of it. And I think while traveling, I think it's kind of the most at risk that these things are, you know, if your iPad is like mine, like it basically never leaves my bedside table. it's safe and sound there, but be mindful of those things. Same thing with laptops. You know, you can crush a laptop and damage the screen in a heavy bag, right? Or if you have it in your backpack and then you throw a suitcase on top of it, like, it's got to be mindful of these things. They can happen in an instant, but it really stinks if you're on a trip and you've damaged something.
All right. Last question for the genius. Can you use a phone with a cracked screen?
It depends. It depends on how bad the crack is. Obviously, if you can see into the phone or your glass bits coming out, you should go get it replaced. You are definitely risking liquid damage at that point because it's not a sealed off thing anymore. But if it's like a hairline crack or something like that, with the knowledge that your water resistance is probably shot, you can keep using it as long as the touch layer still works. You know, if it's the back of the phone, obviously that's different, a lot simpler. But as long as it functions, it's not hurting you, you don't have glass coming out. You know, I had a friend once who broke a phone and she sent me a picture. She's like, is this bad? And you could like see the earpiece like inside the phone. Like she was trolling me, right? Like she knew that she had murdered her phone. But she's like, does this look bad? I was like, oh, what did you do? Even I haven't broken a phone that bad, but you can get by, you know, you can limp one along for a while until you can get it replaced.
All right. Well, I think that answers up our hardware questions. If you've got a hardware question we didn't cover, send it to us. We do feedback episodes. We'd love to cover this more. But overall, I think Apple hardware is like in such a great position now. They've got so much figured out. The batteries, maintenance is better and easier. Cleaning it's easier. And you know, they're really knocking it out of the park with their hardware lately. But there are risks, and hopefully we covered a few of them today. And forewarned is forearmed. There's been some Apple news since we last covered news. I know we're not a news show, but we thought we would do what we call cold takes. Let's just take a bit of news that has happened recently, just to cover it real quickly for the audience. Starting with the new MacBook Air M3 is out.
Yeah.
We saw this coming. We've talked about it. Everybody kind of knew it was coming. We expected an Apple event. We didn't get it. It's a MacBook Air M2 with an additional M. Anything else we should say?
There are a couple. That's really good. That got me. There are a couple of three things I would point out. First of all, the low-end SSD, the 256 gig of storage, that model, that SSD performance was way slower than bigger models because they were using one chip instead of two. And now with the M3, it seems like they've gone back to using two chips. So you're not taking a hit on SSD performance because you get the lowest capacity. That's fantastic. It was bad that Apple did it the other way. The second thing is it has inherited something from the Space Black MacBook Pro in terms of the anti-fingerprint coating. Now, Jason, in his review and on Upgrade, said that it doesn't really make a difference, that the Midnight is still very fingerprinty, but it is a really cool color. Just know that you're probably going to be wiping it down a bunch.
And the other thing I would say is we expected a spring event, and I think the release of this via press release does not bode well for a spring event. I expect that we're going to get the updated iPads pretty soon, too, and those will probably just be an announcement.
I think that's absolutely right. The biggest change with the M3 Air, though, I think, is you can now run dual external displays if you shut the lid of the laptop. And that change is also coming to the M3 14-inch MacBook Pro. Remember that non-Pro, non-Max one that we got back in October? And that solves a lot of complaints people had about wanting to use more than one external display. The trick is you just got to have the lid closed. But if you had like a setup with like a couple of studio displays or a couple of third-party monitors and you stuck your laptop closed in a dock behind them, you can now do that with the Air. I'm glad to see this change. The M1 and M2 Air, of course, didn't have it and Apple took some heat for it. So it seems like they're responding to that. And while not as fully functional and flexible as a MacBook Pro, I think it makes the MacBook Air flexible enough for those people who need it. But I think most people who buy MacBook Air will hook up one display at most, not two. But if you are that person now, the M3 can do that for you.
Yeah, I love it. I make fun of it, but you know, annual updates to Apple Silicon is exactly what I want from Apple. You know, yeah, we have an update. We didn't redesign the whole thing, but it's a little better and the chip gets better every year. And here's the new one. And you don't need to buy it if you have an M1 or an M2, but if you've you're looking to make the transition from Intel, it just got even better for you. And I continue to believe the MacBook Air is like the 90% Mac. Like 90% of the people can get by with this, you know, so.
Totally agree.
The other news item I wanted to just do a cold take on was the Apple Car. You know, we've been hearing about it. You and I have talked about it off and on the show over the years, and it officially got canned since the last time we talked about it. So the Apple Car, rest in peace, pour one out.
Yeah, this was like a decades long thing. I mean, one of the earliest things kind of in Tim Cook's era was, okay, they're gonna work on a car. I think it's clear from reporting from Mark Gurman and others that Apple had the goal of like a level 5 fully autonomous vehicle. No one has done that. No one is even close to that. Apple thought they could swing for the fences here. And then at some point, they realized that they couldn't do that and scaled back to something that was a bit more in line with what others have done in terms of driver assistance, not a fully autonomous vehicle. And of course, there's lots of juicy details in this reporting about some of the design ideas, right? They started by basically building a gleaming white Volkswagen bus. Like, of course they did, because this is the company with Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive. And then eventually that sort of changed. No pedals, no steering wheels, no front windows. Like, they wanted to build the far future. And while their work may make that future happen more quickly, I think they realized for them at this point, this is not what they want to do. And so they've, after 10 years, have done it. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean some layoffs. Some people are going to stay in the company and work on other things, mostly related to AI, which is a big part of autonomous vehicles, right? Not AI in the sense of draw me a picture of a sunset, but AI in the sense of take all the information in from cameras and LiDAR sensors and stuff and, you know, figure out what a car should be.
Don't run over anybody.
Don't run over anybody. So I wrote two blog posts about this. And the first one, I came in pretty hot. I titled it, Apple's Car Project Was Far More Bonkers Than We Ever Knew. And I took Gurman's report and kind of broke it down of like, okay, all these ideas are way too far into the future for this to be a company that like makes products, right? And then I followed it up with a piece looking at some of the benefits that could have come if Apple had been able to pull this off. And I thought of three. I thought of consumer safety. 1.4 million people are killed on roadways around the world each year. That's horrible. In the US, car crashes are the number one non-natural cause of death for people. It's unacceptable. Something that's self-driving and fully automated and talks with all the cars around it, like those numbers would come down and that would be beneficial. And that lines up with Apple's mission, I think, right? They want to make the world a better place. You also get better cities, better infrastructure when all these things are electric. Some people have pitched the idea of robo-taxis, right? Like maybe you wouldn't even own one of these. Maybe there'd be a fleet of them in your city and you could just reserve one and it pick your family up and take you wherever you're going. And again, that combined with the safety aspect, really interesting. And then from Apple's perspective, obviously this is a vehicle that if you're not driving, you have time for other things. And so their other services and software could play into this. If your car is part of the ecosystem you're in, there's obviously benefit to Apple there as well as the consumer. So it wasn't a fool's errand, I don't think, but I do think they let it get out of hand. And when they wanted to have something without steering wheel, without pedals, it's like, okay, that's fine. And like, maybe we should be working on that. But if you want to ship something, you need those things, at least for now.
I was never very excited about the car project. So I felt like maybe that's selfishly because I would never be able to afford whatever Apple was going to make.
For real.
Yeah. Which, so I think that definitely plays a role in it, right? I mean, but the, but also just, I feel like, you know, Apple is a company that says, you know, there's 1,000 no's for every yes. And I think there's so much impact they can make in things like, you know, Vision OS and Apple Silicon and the stuff they're doing for consumer electronics that I'd like them to keep their focus there. And I think making a car company is a ton of distraction. I mean, let's say they figure out all these problems and they ship a car. Well, then they got to deal with you know, replacement parts because cars do crash into each other. And then they got to deal with, you know, there's just a million things that they've got to deal with. How do you sell it and all that stuff? So I just feel like it was a huge distraction. And if it wasn't going to be a massive win for them, they were smart to stop it. And the other thing is just having recently been in the car market, there's a lot of people doing innovation with electric cars. This is going to happen whether Apple does it or not. And maybe this isn't, you know, something they need to address. So my feeling is actually generally positive about them shutting it down. I feel bad about the folks that lost their jobs, but people who are making smart cars for Apple, I feel like are probably going to have a job somewhere else pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So overall, maybe it's good that Apple is focusing in. And that's, as a user of their products, that's what I like.
Yeah, Apple makes computers. They take all different shapes. Some of them you have in your pocket, some are on your desk, some you strap on your face for a couple hours at a time. Car is something distinctly different. And you could argue that things like Apple TV Plus or Apple Fitness are also distinctly different. And while they are there to make the computers better and more profitable. And a car, like, it's super interesting. And I could see why Apple thought they could, in the early years, take it on and really take things to the next level. But it is a fundamentally different thing. Cars are becoming more computer-like, but they're not a computer in the sense that a MacBook is a computer. And that's why it was a weird fit, I think, to your point.
And, you know, they have, in the meantime, come up with this thing, Vision OS. What if all of the effort and resources required to make a car are put into those platforms? How much faster can they move and get better? You know, so I just feel like it's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I get that line of argument. And maybe there's some truth to that in terms of like silicon and this AI work and that sort of thing. But Apple was also hiring people who like worked on car suspension, and those people aren't going to make the MacBook Air better. So I get what you're saying from like a distraction standpoint, but to me, that's, I think, secondary to some of the other things.
And I will say, last point on this traction is, I think it's becoming really clear now that AI is going to be the next disruptor in the technology that Apple sells.
Yep.
And they need to be way in front of this. And I don't believe the news stories that Apple's flat-footed on this. I think they've been working on it for a long time. They're just not a company that tells you what they're doing. But I also do think, you know, to the extent they're bringing car people back to AI, can only be good. Because mm-hmm. I do think Apple needs to, if Apple could get in trouble, I think it would be if AI just blows up and they don't have a story and they don't have an integration with their hardware to make AI help people, and suddenly Apple stuff looks antiquated. And that's another area of focus I hope that, you know, we see addressed in June.
I think we will. We did an episode of Connected a couple of weeks ago. I'll put in the show notes where we talked through all the AI stuff that actually they have done, because there's been a lot of research and development done that in these areas, people publish a lot, which is like, that actually was an issue for Apple early on in this, where they like, there was a report that said Apple's having trouble hiring people for AI positions because those people want to publish, because that's sort of the standard in that field. And Apple said, no, like, well, we're not going to work for you, because like, I want to publish and have my name out there. And that has changed over time. And it's very clear that they're putting the pieces together for something big. And I suspect that June is going to be all about it.
Yeah, me too. Well, either way, we're the Mac Power users. You can find us at relay.fm/MPU. Thank you to our sponsors this week, 1Password and Ecamm. If you're a more Power user subscriber, stick around. I'm going to talk about the tech I used for my little Disney World trip. And more Power users, by the way, is the ad-free extended version of the show. You can sign up for that over at relay.fm/MPU. We would love to have you on board. It's really fun doing the More Power user segments. Some of my favorite stuff on the show is there. And we'll see you next time.